I was talking about the special snobberies of Yale and Harvard men. The thing to observe is not that it exists, but that they're slightly different. And sometime I'll think through the nuances of that, but not today.
That would make a good article for Esquire. Well, let's chat a bit more about some of these men that we've mentioned.
Well, Herb Halpert was he was an awfully good friend of mine. He knew a lot more about folklore than I did, and we were both graduate students together, and so peers at Columbia. The tragedy there, of course, was that he was a great field collector, really one of the greatest, and yet the problem of sitting down and getting it on paper and getting it out. I think he suffered probably from some kind of perfectionism. He'd never learned what Aggie tries to teach all of you young people, that if it's worth doing, it's worth doing badly. But, you know, he was one of those men who never was a specialist. He was in the field. He looked at the whole field. He saw song and story and belief and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Barbeau I never knew well. He came here once and stayed with me back in the 50s. Barbeau is amazing in the range, like Halpert, except much more so. He was concerned with every aspect of French Canadian folklore, the arts, the Indians, the songs, the stories, the beliefs, the customs, everything. He's kind of a universal folklorist. Of the people I knew best were, of course, Harold Thompson and Sandburg and Stith Thompson and Wayland Hand, with whom I still correspond fairly regularly, and who has always been a very good friend. Wayland has never let himself get caught up in the feuds and furies of the American Folklore Society. I was active in the society in the 40s, I guess. I think I was vice president once. In those days, it was a sort of stepchild, an unloved stepchild of the anthropologists who bullied it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never found the kind of academic sniping that the anthropologists and the folklorists get into very amusing. And I think it's very wasteful of energies. And, you know, when there's a pain in the ass you can avoid, you might as well do it. So that after I came here, and got involved with the Museum Association and the status, AASLH, I tended to drop out. Mm-hmm. Years later, because of the Farmers Museum, and maybe the ghost book, I don't know, but particularly the Farmers Museum, they made me a fellow. So I am a fellow of the AFS, and pleased with that.
What kinds of things that were, what kinds of feuds were going on in the AFS when you were...
Well, the Dorson Botkin feud started early. The anthropologists were scornful of everything the folklorists were doing. The question of definition was then what is folklore, just as it's a problem now with what is folk art.
Mm-hmm.
And there was there were the people that were pro-Stith Thompson motif index people and those who were scornful of it. And there were people who, it seems to me that no matter what two or three people started to do, there were always a group of other people who were saying it wasn't worth doing. Well, scholarship, it seems, I think, ought to be free to go in whatever direction it can go. Some of them were going to be, some of those directions will be dead ends. But there has to be a total freedom of exploration.
From here, we might go perhaps to your... Do you want to talk a little bit about your Guggenheim Fellowship?
Well, the Guggenheim Fellowship was the watershed in my life, because up to that point I'd been a teacher at Albany, was a professor, I guess I was an associate professor and was to get my full professorship the next year, and was very happy.
Mm.
And I think probably in due time would have been head of the department. It was going that way. And I applied for a Guggenheim. My students had been collecting a great deal of supernatural material, and I applied for a Guggenheim to do a book on the supernatural folklore of New York. And we went down to the Virgin Islands. My wife had not been very well, and we took us the three kids and rented a house on the beach. And it was a very good year in many ways. I sat down and did about 1,000 words a day. And the first thing I did was the little book for children, Spooks of the Valley. And then I got to work on this longer three-section job of one section on beliefs, one section on witchcraft and related elements, and one section on ghosts. When I came, and it was while I was there that I was offered the job at Cooperstown, and after I finished the manuscript, I came here. And it was here that I began to realize that a book that separated the material in literary form, in terms of literary form, was just not, didn't make sense. It dawned on me gradually that what you were dealing with was a total culture, that the A-drag in the Farmer's Museum and the story among those Germans in the Rensselaer County Hills about taking an A-drag to the crossroads to keep the witches out on Saturday and Friday night was all of a piece, and that we ought to look at the tools and the implements and the hand skills and the songs and the arts and the beliefs and the fears and the customs, the aspirations as a totality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this influenced my concept of the Farmer's Museum quite early. And I hope produced something, certainly not a whole, but here at Cooperstown, with the graduate program, we come about as close to it as anywhere on this continent, certainly, because we have the material culture very often in situ, in mm-hmm. the place it belongs. We have young scholars working on the problems of what those skills mean and what the tools mean and what the appropriate environment for them is. And we have the arts that are related to it, not always out of the culture, but often descriptive of the culture mm-hmm. and so on. So that, in a sense, that day when I looked at the A-drag was for me it was the light on the road to Damascus for me, in the sense that I saw a direction to go,
mm-hmm.
and a direction that an organization could go. And one thing you want to remember is that there is a kind of personal thing here. The Farmers Museum is concerned with my people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We're farmers. Up one generation back, my father left the farm because he went into education because he hated the hard labor of it. Those damn cows that would kick him at 4 a.m. So that in a sense, I suppose, there was an autobiographic factor here, that these were my people,
mm-hmm.
and this has affected positively and negatively much of my relationships here in Cooperstown. I don't move easily with the people who've had money for a long time. And they don't move easily with me. And the great exception, of course, was Stephen Clark, Sr., who was a great man. But I've always felt about the development here, that I was just terribly lucky to come to a spot where a culture that was my own was asking to be interpreted,
mm-hmm.
and one with which I could be completely at ease. I would not have been at ease interpreting Schuyler Manor,
mm-hmm.
or even Olana, but the Lippitt House was out of my own roots.
Mm-hmm. Well, in other words, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but what you've tried to do here at the farm is kind of a holistic approach to the culture.
Correct.
And your interest in folklore was just one thing that fed into the development of the...
Yeah, I have had particular personal interest in various aspects of this great pie and various slices of
mm-hmm.
it, but it's the pie I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to have been interested in folk culture as you or folk ways and customs as you learn about them in murders, or as you learn about them from ghost lore. But I see, or tools and implements or mm-hmm. art or whatever, and at different times I've had different enthusiasms. But the thing that really concerns me is that we look at the total culture in America, which was basically traditional. Now,
mm-hmm.
in a country where people have been literate for a long time, and where the newspaper and the magazine and later the other media are constantly affecting the society, it's pretty difficult to say this is a purely oral tradition. It isn't. It isn't true of the ballads, it isn't true of the legends and the local history, the folklore. It can't be in this country. But what the people take of what they read and make over,
mm-hmm.
This is of importance because it tells what our dreams were doing to our facts.
Mm-hmm. Would you kind of agree with the statement that there is a folk in every person, no matter...
I don't know what the hell that kind of thing
means,
Ellen. Well,
you know, that that most people have some, I don't want to say traditional elements, but...
Well, of course they
well,
do.
Well, yeah, maybe...
Sure they do. That's inevitable. And it may be the traditions of a banking class or a
mm-hmm.
fox chasing. What do? They ride to the hounds. But... I guess that my interests have always rested with what is it, Butterfield called it, the beneath the level of historical scrutiny. Mm-hmm. I'm interested, have always been interested in the culture of the people that did not, until my own generation, begin to get any attention from the historians.
Do you think that maybe one of the reasons you kind of avoided or tried to avoid so many of these feuds within the folklore, the scholarly folklore group, was that you had a much broader view and felt that everything was valuable in some way, or that most approaches had
Oh, that's value. Partly so, and partly because it just seemed wasteful. Mm-hmm. Wasteful of energies that ought to be used other ways. I thought there was a place for all of these points of view. Mm-hmm. And to say, you know, I hate people that are, I dislike people that are doctrinaire.
Mm-hmm.
The communist view, the extreme right-wing religious point of view that says this is the only truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's horseshit. And I don't think it matters whether we're talking politics or folklore or religion. There's no one truth.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the AFS today is more doctrinaire than it was?
I don't know. Oh. I haven't been to a meeting in years. The last time I went, I was Toastmaster and made fun of everybody that was one of the poobahs and hadn't been asked back. I had a fine time.
Okay. Well, could we talk for just a minute about perhaps how your study of folklore...
How what?
How your study or your interest in folklore led into folk art, if we bypass the museum bit, which I think we've talked about.
You can't.
Okay.
You can't, because once I had seen the thing as a whole, that the folklore and the material object were related,
mm-hmm.
at this level of the culture, then I began looking at things like barley forks, and then quilts, and then things like the picture of Mrs. Cooper, and it all fell into a place. This was just one more side of the pie, one mm-hmm. more slice of the pie. And so that I suppose what's happened is that at different times in my life, I have been interested in different slices.
Yeah.
And for example, I'm hoping in the next year or so to get back to the murder material.
Mm-hmm.
But something else may get in the way, but I think I'll continue working with the folk art for a long time. It's an interesting field. It's young, and it's struggling to discover its own boundaries, and it's very much the way folklore was 30 years ago.
You know, I was interested to hear you say about that you had recorded material from this German community, and because I wasn't aware that, I was interested in how much field work you had done.
I don't really know how much I did.
Well, did you do any other recordings?
No, I think practically all of the recording I did was there. Now, when I got involved with the ghost lore, I did quite a lot of ghost lore material on my own. My students were turning up good leads that I would mm-hmm. follow up. For example, I got very interested in the whole business of the hitchhiking ghost
oh.
as an example of a oft-repeated, very common legend
mm-hmm.
which always has specifics. It was told to me by my cousin the other night, who had been driving along Route 20 at 9:30 on such and such a night. Well, then you go find the cousin. Oh, no, it wasn't me. It was my brother.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was, you know. I sent you that clipping the other day
about the elephant
sitting on the Volkswagen. Well, this is exactly,
mm-hmm.
I spent quite a lot of time doing that.
Have you found, to get back to the murders, this is just a kind of a question from my personal interest, but when you interview individuals about murder cases, for example, that there is much variation between the oral record and the written record of a murder?
I have never worked on a murder that was recent enough for memory. Mm-hmm. Now, if I do the Eva Koo case, which I, for this book of New York murders that I'm mm-hmm. planning.
I have a lot of interest in that murder, too.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of good material in the library. And mm-hmm. Mrs. Ward, for example, remembers her. Mm-hmm. And I very foolishly never recorded Jack Mitchell, who was the sheriff at the time and worked for us, old Jack. And Mrs. Mitchell, who was the matron at the prison, I knew her very well and went down the night she was executed to be with her, was the one of the guides at the tavern mm. for years. And I foolishly never got it done. So I don't know. I think the people's memory are a lot better than generally are given credit.
Yeah.
There are always elements of truth there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's dangerous to generalize too much.
Well, I just wondered if you had run, you know, into any specific.
I've never worked on that kind of a problem.
Okay.
The whole business of the founding of the Folklore Society I've covered in What Makes Papa Laugh, the way Thompson and I developed that.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting experience because I thought I remembered exactly what had happened. And then I began to go back and read Thompson's and my letters. He was at Cornell and I was at Albany the summer we founded that.
Mm-hmm.
So that... And I thought I remembered what he had done and what I had done. And I came to read the correspondence and discovered that it wasn't that way at all. Now, if I had given him more credit in my recollections than he deserved, you'd say, well, I was awed by a much finer scholar and an older man that you admired. Or if I had thought I had done more, you'd say, well, that's just the bastard's egotism.
Mm.
It wasn't that way at all. It was just a confusion of facts. He had done things I thought I had done, and I had done things I thought he had done.
Mm.
But the record of the way we got that started is there.
Okay. Well, Dr. Jones, I think that about covers it. Unless you have anything you'd like to add.
No. I'd forgotten to remember a lot of these things.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.